emerging market real estate is now large, but it hadn't always been. In fact, it's a fairly recent phenomenon. So there are, by our analysis, over 1,100 publicly traded real estate stocks, and that comprises over $1 trillion in market capitalization and about $5 billion in daily trade liquidity. These are across about 45 emerging market stock exchanges.
Hello and welcome to the REIT Report. I'm your host, Sarah Borkson-Quito. I'm pleased to be joined today by John Haskell, Chief Investment Officer at Adler Capital Management. John is here to talk about real estate investing in global emerging markets and some of the larger trends he is seeing and preparing for. John, thanks so much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start by talking about your firm and the Adler Global Urbanization Listed Fund that you manage. How did you decide that the time was right to launch a new investment vehicle?
Atlas Capital, we manage a long-only global emerging market equity fund, and we invest in listed real estate specifically. You know, we call it the Atlas Global Urbanization Listed Fund because a key theme for us is urbanization, that rapid rise of emerging market cities and the bottom-up investment opportunities that it underpins to own REITs or non-REIT real estate stocks. I founded Atlas and launched it in the middle of COVID. It was an intentional start when prices for listed real estate trading on exchanges like Jakarta and Mexico City, volatile foreign exchanges, you know, those prices had dislocated from underlying real estate fundamentals. And this was also in the context of emerging markets being generally cheap after about two decades of you know, washout, especially relative to developed markets. And I'd say even zooming out a little further, the declining interest rates that we have seen over many decades, it's led to a collective amnesia of sorts, you know, all sorts of market distortions. The bubbles, sure, like the growth stocks and the disruptive tech stocks trading at any price. But perhaps more relevant for us, there has been, and still is, I would argue, an underappreciation of the role of hard assets with real cash flows as a shelter from inflation.
Can you talk a little bit about how the fund has performed since its inception?
So since inception, just about 2.5 years ago, the fund has returned a cumulative net 33%. That's through last month's end. And that's in the context of EM-listed real estate down by 26% from our starting point. So two takeaways there. One, the opportunity set's more compelling even than when we launched. Public valuations are less demanding. The index is now about 48% dollar measured below pre-COVID levels, you know, end of 2019. And secondly, there's plenty of room for real estate investors like Atla, fundamental bottom-up value investors, do the research to select stocks and outperform in the context of that passive benchmark because there's such dispersion and such inefficiency at the individual stock level.
And how have you seen urbanization trends develop in the last few years? And how would you say they compare with what you've seen in the US and other markets?
That's such a big question. I mean, maybe just to start, I would say the headline is that the greatest social and economic transformations in the world today are in developing countries. And it all comes down, in my opinion, to urbanization. And while developed cities, they've, you know, mostly plateaued in population growth, emerging market cities are inflecting in population and in wealth. And to an extent that washes out any of the countervailing or centrifugal trends that you see in developed markets. And just to put some numbers on that, the poorest quartile of countries on a GDP per capita basis, so the bottom quarter of countries by wealth, are on average 40% urbanized, right? So 60% of the population lives outside of cities. And by contrast, the richest quartile of countries are 80, 81% urbanized. So there's a massive, you know, shift as the economies of, you know, the global south become wealthier and more efficient to cities. And that creates, you know, really compelling trends for investors like ourselves, primarily because of the secular demand growth combined with the very natural constraints to resources, land, and even constraints to the capacity of infrastructure in cities. And it creates these opportunities for capital appreciation in the out years, especially.
And just to put things in perspective, how large is the universe of global emerging real estate and how does it perform more broadly?
So EM real estate, emerging market real estate, is now large, but it hadn't always been. In fact, it's a fairly recent phenomenon. So there are, by our analysis, over 1,100 publicly traded real estate stocks, and that comprises over $1 trillion in market capitalization and about $5 billion in daily trade liquidity. These are across about 45 emerging market stock exchanges. So it's a relevant size for not just, you know, individual investors, but large institutional investors as well. And it hadn't always been this way. I mean, as a lot of the research in, you know, your organization has highlighted, there's been a market expansion of REIT legislation globally into markets from, you know, the Philippines to Mexico. And that has led to an acceleration of capital markets in that structure. And even outside of REITs, there's been a growth in the universe of potential assets that one could invest in, you know, at a multiple of the rate of growth of capital markets generally. So this is large enough to be relevant and fairly new, which also brings all sorts of interesting challenges and opportunities, you know, inefficiencies that create opportunities for investors.
Do you know the best strategies for decarbonizing the built environment? Are you interested in learning more about using AI in the workplace? Do you know how to effectively align your DEI targets with your business goals? Learn the answers to these questions and much more at NAREIT's REITworks Sustainability Conference, taking place June 28th and 29th in Las Vegas. Join professionals in sustainability, CSR, communications, DEI, finance, and law for 2 days of educational sessions, roundtables, and meaningful networking. Visit go.reit.com/REITworks REIT report to register. That's go.reit.com/REITworks REIT report. John, what are some of the steps that are involved as you go about assessing global emerging markets and their potential? And are there particular investor concerns that you have to address when investing in unfamiliar markets?
There are. There's an interesting article today in the Financial Times. It's a profile of the architect Norman Foster. And he says, you know, the older I get, the more I realize it's not about the building, but about the city. And I think that that is relevant to what we do on the listed real estate space as well. It's so often the case that we focus on one building or one portfolio of assets when really these assets are in the context of a larger city that has its challenges and competitiveness and growth prospects for the future. So part of the challenge for me is pairing the bottom-up fundamental valuation exercise, the, you know, security analysis, the public market value investors do, the bottom-up underwriting that private equity real estate investors do, marrying that with a top-down awareness of the overall prospects of a city in which we invest. Because really what we're doing is buying shares, you know, fractional ownership of real brick and mortar hard assets that are a piece of a city that provides current yield, but it also provides, again, that capital appreciation potential in the out years. And so much of that has to do with the competitiveness of the local economy and even the particular, you know, city. But in terms of the real underwriting work, I would say that one of the challenges we face overseas is simply the lack of standardization around reporting. So in the US, you know, NAREIT has done such a job of creating an industry standard, right, for how to report on the operations of real estate. And abroad, you don't even have those standardized conventions. So a lot of the work is as simple as doing the basic calculation as to what is the equivalent cap rate to other cap rates in other places of two assets to make them apples to apples comparable. There is no Bloomberg function right now where you can just simply see a screen of all the valuation, let's say enterprise value per square foot or cap rate scrubbed, NOI cap rate versus enterprise value or FFO cap rate versus market cap scrubbed of all distortions. You just simply can't pull that up on Bloomberg or any of the other data providers because it's such a new space. That information hasn't been easily standardized. So part of the challenge is that valuation work, which though not rocket science, I would argue that many aren't doing that. And many of the market participants aren't doing that. They're trading on other impulses. And it can create quite interesting opportunities where public real estate can trade at a discount to private equity real estate despite superior liquidity, which is unexpected or counterintuitive and ultimately, again, an opportunity. I'd say quickly, another difference is the variation in governance. Capital markets abroad, especially these nascent REIT-led countries, have just begun to innovate and follow the US and Europe in some of the sophisticated ways in which, you know, real estate is available through public markets. And so we have to do much more work than your average REIT stock picker maybe in the United States around seeking out and avoiding key governance traps. And so governance plays a greater role too.
John, can you just mention which markets you're perhaps finding most compelling right now?
Sure. So the fund today is quite invested in Latin America. And within Latin America, we've seen great opportunities, and since inception have been significantly invested in Mexico. Valuations there are slightly less compelling today than they were in the past, just as that market has appreciated. We're finding more opportunities in Brazil and Chile today, and in Southeast Asia as well. I think there are opportunities in Indonesia. We're invested in quite compelling real estate stocks in Vietnam, and to a lesser extent, India, which I think has great fundamentals, but markets are fairly richly valued today.
And what are some of the key trends in your markets that you expect to be watching in the months ahead?
Well, I think the one that has been on people's mind in the past has been the reopening of China, and that has played out to some extent and disappointed versus expectations to some extent, but there's still quite a ways to go there. Geopolitics, whether it be the conflict in Ukraine or rising tensions with Taiwan, are certainly on folks' mind. But in the next few months, what I would argue is the most important trend is the impact of higher interest rates on real estate markets. And, you know, certainly in the U.S., there's distress on the horizon for certain pockets of commercial real estate, maybe Class B office, for example. In general, in emerging markets, it's hard to generalize. They're so different. But some of them carry much less debt than what you find in the U.S. These are markets that have been through crises in the not-too-distant past, countries where companies don't take for granted stable and cheap access to credit. And so they are more defensively capitalized. And so that's interesting to see how it'll play out. You also find in a lot of emerging markets, the structure of debt is more variable. It's more short-term. And so some of the interest rate hikes that have been happening globally, in the case of Latin America, often preceding the Fed, in the case of Asia, often following the Fed, but those rate hikes that have happened to a large extent around the world have flowed through in their impact to real estate markets faster in emerging markets that have, you know, again, these sort of shorter duration debt instruments and a greater reliance on variable interest rate debt. And so it'll be interesting to see how the United States evolves, how developed Europe evolves, whether it goes in the direction of Sweden, which right now is seeing some distress as a market with high leverage and variable interest rate debt. My point of view is that, again, if you can be selective within emerging markets to avoid those that have a more precarious balance sheet at the country level and individual company level, then I think there's some shelter to be had in emerging markets relative to developing markets.
Great. Now, John, we've covered lots of ground, but is there anything else that you would like to mention?
You know, I'd say that the most important trend to me is, again, this, you know, growth in population, but also growth in capacity, growth in efficiency, which leads to greater wealth at the individual, you know, citizen level and at the city level. And so when investing in, you know, in these markets with a long enough horizon to want to capture that growth long-term, I think it pays to be selective and to select the best governed and sort of the most strongly capitalized real estate companies on these exchanges. There's very little compensation, I would say, for taking excessive risks at the bottom-up level, because most of the value is in the out years and depends upon, you know, the resilience of these companies to see through what can be quite treacherous real estate cycles. The fund that we have is not better at timing those cycles than anyone else. But I think the reason we're able to differentiate in performance, at least so far, has been the fact that we veer towards the companies that no matter the circumstance, no matter the adversity that comes up, even unforeseen, you know, they're able to navigate that better than others. And what is distress for one player can be an opportunity for the better capitalized player to grab market share, buy assets at a fire sale price, you know, expand while others are on their back foot. So it pays to be selective because, again, the vast majority of the value proposition here is in the out years, and you need to be able to get there in the meantime.
Great. John, thank you so much for your perspectives today. It's been really interesting.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And to our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode of the REIT Report, please subscribe or leave a review on your favorite podcast platform.